And welcome back to an episode of Bears on Tap, specifically an episode of Building the Board, our draft project that we are bringing to you Bears fans. Today, I am joined by Robert Schmitz and Stephen Letizia, two of our scouts. We're all here in Mobile, Alabama. We just got done with day one of practices of the Senior Bowl. How are you guys doing?
Pretty good. This is my first Senior Bowl, so I'm excited. It was fun, you know, to get on the field and like actually talk to the prospects. Like, that's crazy. Mm-hmm. The fact that that's the thing that I'm doing now. So yeah, I had a great time. Yeah.
It's a great day out there. I mean, it's always so fun to get to watch these guys play football, especially getting to see so many guys demonstrate their ability against different competition. It's a little different in shells than it is in full pads. So hopefully we get a little bit of that full pad action tomorrow. And today is a little bit more of a feeling out process. But man, as far as day one goes, the talent level out there looks awesome.
And I'm glad you said that. That's something you don't really think about, like in shells. Like, So no pads on the legs, right? It was just shoulder pads, and that's all that they were playing in. And that changes things. Like, especially for me and Steve watching the trenches, that definitely changes things. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not hitting as hard. There's not the same intensity there in day one. And I think that's something we noticed a little bit early on, right,
yeah.
Steve?
Yeah, and if that's going to be conducive to certain types of players are going to stand out when you don't have full contact. Like a guy like Tavondre Sweat, he's going to be a guy when you are in full contact is going to look a lot better than in shells, you know. And so it is different watching them, especially in the trenches, like you said. So, yeah.
Yeah. So let's just jump into who you guys think the biggest winners are so far today. And we'd start with Robert. So Robert, who were your biggest winners?
Well, it's easy to talk winners when it comes to wide receivers and DBs, because you take some of the fastest guys and bada boom, it's easy to say guys like Roman Wilson, right?
Yeah.
It's easy to say guys like Ladd McConkey. I mean, especially on a day where you're going to see less contact from the DBs, the guys that can run away from you generally did, and more power to him. I mean, Roman Wilson looked awesome today. Yeah. I thought, do we want to go practice to practice, or do we want to go or just talk?
Let's start with the national team and then go to the American team.
Starting with the national team, I thought Roman stood out. I thought the corner from Notre Dame, Cam Hart, had himself quite a solid practice. Wanted to see more of from the Oregon corner the name I cannot remember, but he's just a good player that I think can match Cam Hart's play level. And I thought Cam had a better day. Quinyon Mitchell was the story of the day.
Yeah.
I mean, he looked every bit the Daniel Jeremiah top 25 pick that DJ is at least slotting him in on his big board. He was nearly unstoppable. Nobody could really find any room against him except for Malachi Corley on one rep, and he had a solid day. But
now, where's Quinyon Mitchell at? Is that Toledo?
That's Toledo.
Holy Toledo. Matt Eberflus has got his guy.
he played so well. I thought the safeties were fine if they didn't really give us much of anything to watch when it came to that group. The tight ends weren't near as impressive as the group that we'll talk about later. So as far as skill guys go, you had some scattered receivers. Brendan Rice, another one. I mean, I'm just naming names at this point. But I thought Brendan Rice looked really strong, which I thought he needed to do. I mean, he's trying to establish himself as a potential X receiver.
Right.
And so that kind of strength that he was able to show off today was exactly the trait that you wanted to see. I wanted more from Devontae Walker, but it's probably because I view him as a late first-round pick, and I want a late first-round pick to stand out a certain way that I didn't necessarily think he did. But, I mean, I'll get to one guy on the losers later. Those are all the names that come to mind.
Yeah.
One thing about Brendan Rice is you were watching the wide receivers more than Q and I were. One thing about him is I noticed he had trouble getting aligned like three or four times early on. Mm. Like coaches had to come on the field and tell him where to go.
Huh.
And that's, you know, very different than, you know, I watch him play, but that's something that is not a good look for a guy trying to impress scouts and GMs and everything like that. So that's something to kind of monitor. Who knows if that was happening at USC a lot, but he was getting open, so he can do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. I think you pointed that out to me. I didn't catch that you said Brendan Rice.
Yeah.
It's surprising to me because, I mean,
Jerry Rice's kid.
You'd think he'd be pretty much on his P's and Q's on that.
Right.
What about you, Steve? Who stood out to you from the first practice?
From the first practice of the national team, and I'm going to be beating a dead horse here, because the first time I was on this podcast, I talked about Jaxson Powers-Johnson, and I'm going to talk about Jaxson Powers-Johnson again, and I will continue to talk about Jaxson Powers-Johnson.
He was a thing of beauty today.
Because he put on a clinic today. Just every rep was a win. Even his losses, he was able to recover from nicely. He got beat initially. He, you know, had the flexibility and the balance to get in a favorable position and just and win and ultimately win the rep. So he was as dominant as advertised, and I'm getting very nervous that he is no longer going to be in play for the Bears later in the draft, because it's looking like he's going to possibly sneak into that end of the first round now.
I mean, so now you got – because you also had Zach Frazier here today, but coming off the broken leg, can't practice.
Yeah.
And you had Cedric Van Pran drop out last minute. Suddenly you're sitting here saying JPJ is the only thing I really feel that good about at the center position. If you need a center, you're sitting in the 20s, you might just grab.
And Graham Barton's making a transition. That's tough, you know, so he's not a true center, even though some people project him. There's a lot of question marks besides JPJ.
And he had a great day.
He did.
Like, he was just doing whatever he wanted out there. It was really fun to see. But, yeah, I'm worried that he's jumping into the first round combo.
A couple friends of mine on Radio Row specifically got the chance to sit down and talk to JPJ before practice. He mentioned that he wants to be nasty. He wants to bring a nastiness to his demeanor, and it sounds like that was obvious on the day. Like,
if that's what he wants to do, he succeeded. He very much succeeded.
Yeah. That's just fun to hear about.
Yeah. Gotta love those.
How about the second practice? So what was that? The American team. Robert, what did you see in the American team?
So there are some really good receivers in the American team, and there's some really solid corners that, again, like, as the American team lost Kalen Carson, I imagine, because there's two or three guys on the Senior Bowl roster that I don't recognize, which I think they lost the corner from Missouri, who probably dropped out. He's got like a triple name. And then they lost I think Kalen Carson. So
Chris Abrams, right?
Yes, exactly. And so they lost a couple really solid corners, which is a bummer. It's not to say that the guy from Fresno State, whose name I do not know yet, is somehow just terrible or something, but it's more to say I'm watching Drew Phillips and a bunch of these receivers until the tight ends took the field. And they have just captured my whole heart and soul. I mean, I can't stop talking about Ben Sinnott out of Kansas State.
So for those of you who might be sitting there going, who is Ben Sinnott? We stayed up till 2 a.m. last night watching Ben Sinnott tape. So we're here to tell you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, this is a Kansas State kid who can move like Kyle Juszczyk or something very similar. I mean, he moves like an H-back, but he blocks like a wide tight end. I mean, he is a really skilled player. And I don't want to get over my skis here, but at the same time, we have first-round picks that are playing out there in Mobile, and I feel like Ben Sinnott is playing at that level within the bands of a single practice at Mobile, Alabama. So don't let me get too far ahead, but I really can't say enough, because it's not as if Jared Wiley, the tight end from TCU, is having a bad day. It's not as if Jaheim Bell didn't put out some of the best reps as far as receiving tight ends go. And yet, Sinnott's footwork, both in receiving and blocking and pass blocking too, that shows up on his tape, sticks out to me in a way that a lot of others don't. And in a draft where you know there's already going to be 6 to 10 teams. I'm thinking about it this way. 6 to 10 teams are already planning on taking Brock Bowers, if not more than 6 to 10.
Yeah.
And so if that's the case, they're already trying to ideate what this role for their tight end is going to be. And I think that that's a huge boon for Sinnott and Bell in particular, where they may not be Brock Bowers, but they may be Brock Bowers at home.
Right.
Right? In the same way that I would say Sam Laporta kind of benefited from everybody prepping for Michael Bayer and then ending up just liking Laporta more for the exact same role.
It's interesting you bring that up, because I actually talked to Sinnott after practice, and I asked him, you know, who he compares himself to, and he said Sam Laporta. And I think that's a great comparison, even with like just from like a comp standpoint, because they have similar builds, similar play style, but also kind of the comparison to him is his draft projection. Because remember last year, Sam Laporta was kind of, you know, people were aware of him, but he was kind of, you know, that like fifth, sixth tight end, and then he just started creeping up, and I think he was the second tight end drafted, maybe third. Yeah. But anyway, he went a lot earlier than people thought. I think Sinnott, whatever his name is, however you pronounce it, could have a similar rise for sure.
I can't say I know the tight end class top to bottom, but I don't think that there's that many guys in between Bowers and somebody like Sinnott based on the tape we're seeing.
Yeah. I mean, last year's tight end class was one of the best in the last few years, at least. This year's tight end class, I haven't watched a lot of them, but it seems like it's Brock Bowers and then Pete. Everyone's fighting for that number two spot.
And let me go ahead and brandish my big nerd card. Right. And point out that just because last year's tight end class was as good as it was, makes it a logical fallacy that you would think that this tight end class doesn't have players as good or better. Right. It was deep last year, and that's a good thing. But while it may create a bit of a feeding frenzy, I don't know. I mean, I'm spending a lot of words about a tight end that the Bears are almost certainly not going to draft. But yeah. When the wide receivers, like we didn't even mention Ricky Pearsall earlier. I thought Aeneas Smith looked tough as nails, even though he honestly struggled with some of his matchups. The safeties look so good. And I'm so excited that the Bears are here because they basically brought everybody. I don't know if you guys saw, but you know that they're back there interviewing Jalen Simpson, Bo Brady, Cam Kitchens, Tyke Smith, Javon Bullard. I mean, it's an all-star cast, so to speak, of these like free safeties that can also play in the box a little bit. And that's exactly what the Bears want anyway.
Yeah. And that's what they need. Mm-hmm. You know, it's why is one thing need is another. You kind of need another safety if Eddie Jackson is no longer here. Now, I'm just one more thing I got to bring back to Sinnott. Do either of y'all remember what number he was playing or wearing
today?
Yeah,
81.
So during run blocking drills, there's this guy who I'm like, this guy's tiny, because I'm watching offensive linemen against defensive linemen. I'm like, what's he doing here? And against an edge rusher. Rolls over this edge rusher. And I turn to Steve and I'm like, who is 84? And he goes, Ben Sinnott. And I go, oh, okay. Okay. But anyways, like you said, enough about Ben Sinnott.
Yeah.
Steve, what did you think about what you saw there today? Who stood out to you?
So in the second practice, you and I were watching the offensive line, defensive line, like we normally do. And I mean, we both agree here. I think there's one guy who stood up above the rest, and that was Tyler Guyton from Oklahoma, who's been rising up boards pretty quickly. A lot of people have him in the first round. I think Daniel Jeremiah released his top 50. I think he had him at like 15, 17. 16, 17, whatever it was. So super high. And he looked like, you know, a top 20 player today. New to the position, long, athletic, needs to add some weight. I shouldn't say that. He's listed at 330 pounds, but if you look at him, he does not look like he's nearly 330 pounds. I would guess he was like 280, but he carries it extremely well. And he looked really good today. His highs were really high. He had one really bad rep that I got on video. I don't want to take anything away from him because he had a great day.
I got five of the good ones on video.
Yeah,
so
go to Q's Twitter to see that. But it just goes to show kind of the prospect that he is. The super high ceiling, but then the super low floor.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of where he is. So, but yeah, he won the day for me in terms of offensive line.
I got to say, on Tyler Guyton's front, I spoke with him some after the practice. Awesome kid. Awesome. Like, so polite, nice. So willing to give information and to just play ball in that way, and just extremely polite, very thankful to everyone who was asking him questions too. Like, I couldn't say enough good things about him based on my limited interaction. But so did you guys have any guys that stood out as, you know, you were hoping to see a little more from today?
So I probably have outsized expectations for Devontae Walker, which was one name that I know I would bring up in this case where he was not as dominant. But part of that is also because they weren't going to, or they put the wide receivers and DBs on the national side, which he's playing for, in about the 20-yard line. And Tez is really going to show off that speed if you put him at the other side of the field. And Tez is going to, you may be hearing this and saying, well, Robert, how on earth are you saying that Devontae Walker had a tough day? I heard he won both one-on-ones at the end of the day. Well, that's because Kalen King had the worst day out of maybe anybody, I mean, both squads, which is a tough thing to admit because I really love Kalen King's movement toolkit, but I don't know if he won a rep. I mean, seemed as if he was incredibly overconfident. He reminds me a lot of a corner who I've been reaching for the name for all day. It was 2 years ago. It was the best corner on Georgia. When I came to the Senior Bowl then, and he dropped like a stone after a bad Senior Bowl.
Two years ago.
But so it's a deep cut. Maybe somebody will remember it.
How late did he fall?
He ended up falling into maybe the fourth or fifth round.
Okay.
But he was getting second round buzz before that. And King is very similar where it's one thing to have poor technique. It's another thing to be non-competitive. We're just non-competitive on a lot of these reps. I mean, the kid out of Arizona cooked him deep, among others. And so I'm glad that King's getting his chance. Hopefully we see things improve tomorrow. But if you're Kalen King, you wanted to get those ghosts of Marvin Harrison and what happened to you against Ohio State as far away as possible. This brings them all back.
So what is it, just fight that you want to see from King tomorrow? Or like, what is there anything in particular that you think would really bring you back towards like feeling good about
it? He keeps overextending his jam and then losing his footing almost immediately. And so you're getting guys that aren't affected enough by the jam in the first place, and then they run right by him and he never catches up. Because as much as people talk about, I think corner is such a funny position because people talk all the time about needing to be fast enough to play outside corner, and you do, but nobody is the Flash, right?
Right.
Nobody, once you lose two steps on a receiver, can just make up that ground without a poor throw or without some kind of change of direction that just works in your favor, right? And so in Kalen's case, he's just spending way too much and losing key leads to receivers that you can't do that if you're going to succeed in the NFL. He's still somebody that I think is athletically worth believing in, but it's just a tough day one, right? Yeah. Everything wrapped in the bubble of, for all of the hyperbole that we might talk about it, it's not like because of his day one, he's going to just drop like a brick. It's more like, well, now we're going to pay extra attention to him tomorrow, and you better bring something to the table.
That's a huge part of this whole Senior Bowl practice week, is seeing how guys take losses and adjust to it and you know, come out and win the next day or do something different. And maybe they don't win, but the fact that they did something different that they'd never done before says a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How about you, Steve? Was there anyone that you wanted to see a little bit more out of that you might zone in a little more on tomorrow?
Yeah. So there are two guys come to mind immediately. First one, I'll kind of skim over because he's a day three guy. So, you know, it is what it is. Tanner Bordellini is a guy, as a center prospect from Wisconsin, that I really like. He had a rough day today, but he's a day three guy. So, you know, hopefully he'll bounce back tomorrow. If we're talking about a guy who I have really high expectations for and he didn't really live up to it, it's Lei Tulatu from UCLA. He looked really skinny. And I know he was listed at 260, which is a good size. He just looked really skinny. He didn't really win any pass rush reps, and that's what he does. And we're talking about a guy who's trying to get drafted in the top 10.
Mm-hmm.
I have high expectations for you. So it's not that he looked bad. It's that he just didn't look great. He didn't look top 10 pick-wise. In the team drills, he was getting washed away in the run game, which, you know, I had some concerns about his running stopping ability. It's not a huge flaw on tape, but I, you know, wanted to see a little bit more here today, and he didn't really show that. So I say, just because I had such high expectations going in, I think he underwhelmed a little bit, but I think he's going to get back, you know, in the next couple days.
As far as his tape went, I mean, he played a lot of, sure, he played quite a bit of edge, but he also played inside a lot.
Yeah, right? Mostly on passing downs, but yeah.
So did he do that here, or was he playing primarily as a pure edge/defensive end?
No, I didn't see. He was just playing on the edge. I didn't see him go inside. These are pretty vanilla.
Sure.
You're not moving guys around get mismatches. You're putting a guy in a spot and let him rush. So yeah, he was just on the edge.
But just saying, I mean, that's kind of the point, right? That if you're not getting any defensive, the best way to talk about vanilla is that you get no schematic support in favor, but also against, right? And in Latu's case, if it turns out that inside move of his is something that he's relied on a little more than maybe we thought. This sure. might be an avenue to see it. It's only going to help Dallas Turner more, yeah. right?
Sure. Yeah, that makes complete sense. Well,
and especially from a Bears perspective where you're saying, you know, he kicked inside on passing downs. I mean, you already have DeMarcus Walker. You already have Zach Pickens. You have Jervon Dexter. You have three different guys that you're willing to play at three technique on passing downs.
Yeah.
You can't really add one. You need a guy who can win on the edge on passing down. So yeah. that's an interesting aspect to think about going into tomorrow.
That's a really good point. Yeah, that versatility is something that they've clearly coveted yeah. in targeting players. But how many more guys do you need that can do that, that right. fill that role? They have that kind of set. So like in terms of – we're getting into a different conversation now. Mm-hmm. But in terms of like an edge prospect, I do think you want that guy who can win the edge consistently because that is really what you're missing. I mean, you got Montez Sweat, who's great, mm-hmm. but he's more of a power guy. If you can get a speed guy like Turner or – Latu potentially, like that's gonna open up that defense a little bit.
Yeah.
One more loser. It was always something with Florida State wide receiver Johnny Wilson. Yeah. I mean, it was when he was running routes on air, it was his hands. When he was running routes with a DB, it was his feet. Now there was this one beautiful moment against Kentucky corner Andrew Phillips. I feel bad for Phillips because he's so fast and he's so heady and he's just 5'10". And plays in a squat. So he's 5'10 and plays smaller than he is, right? Of course, Johnny Wilson is his nightmare matchup. And that was the one time where he nailed a dig and caught it easily. And it was like, oh, Drew, that sucks, right? But Wilson is one of these guys where his size makes it very obvious if he wins. Brendan Rice has the same thing going for him, where when he's winning, you go, the big guy is winning. I want the big guy. It's human nature, right? Yeah. But with Wilson, I'm amazed at his invisibility out there. I mean, he has a major opportunity to really shine, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like he's shining.
Yeah. I'd actually be, based on what you said earlier, I'd be really interested to see him against Kalen King. Mm-hmm. Because I mean, you have a guy who, like, honestly, he beat press pretty well, but he can't capitalize on it.
Right.
In the same way as a lot of receivers, and a guy who's over aggressively pressing, I think it would be an interesting matchup to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how about putting our Bears glasses on and saying, like, a few prospects that you guys are really interested in for the Chicago Bears?
See if you want to start.
Yeah. One guy I really like, I liked him pre the Senior Bowl, and I think he had a really good day today, sticking on the offensive line, was Christian Haynes from UConn. He's undersized. He's like 6'2", 313, I think is what he weighed in at. So, you know, not the biggest guy, but he's just so athletic. And he hits his spots, you know, when you're running a wide zone. And he can – his fluid hips to, you know, to execute reach blocks. Everything you want out of a guy who's going to win with mostly athleticism, he's what you have. He's the guy. And I feel like with these Senior Bowl one-on-ones, those tend to kind of favor more power guys. I don't know, correct me if you guys think, you know, I'm wrong here, but it's more you're lining up one guy versus one guy. And if you are a power guy, you're going to win there. So I didn't expect him to have a great day because that's not really his game, but he held up really well with bull rushes and just power as well. So I think he's a guy that's going to go second, third round probably, who's just going to be a really, really solid guard, potentially center. He got some snaps at center too in the NFL. So if he can play center, that's even just more of a plus because obviously it's a big need for them.
Yeah.
What have you seen? Is it easier for power guys than it is for speedier guys?
To transition to
– For like, offensive line.
Like, for Senior Bowl reps.
I think – yeah. I think it is easier for power guys because it's easier to throttle your power down mm-hmm. than it is to throttle your speed down as far as like your – Any motion, any play, it, you know, you can bench press as slow as you want, right? But
right.
you can't sprint slow.
Yeah. And it's for different positions. Like if we're talking about receivers, yeah, it's definitely more advantageous to be a speed guy than a, you know, contested catch. Same thing with like defenders. Like for defenders, if you're a pass rusher, being able to be a speed guy, and,
yeah,
because you have so much room to run. It's just one-on-one. There's no one to your right and one to your left. You have all the room in the world. But I mean, offensive linemen, it's tough.
Yeah, I mean, there's no – for offensive line, there's no flipping your hips slow.
Yeah.
There's no settling into your anchor slow. And it's hard to go from my feet are moving at three-quarter speed, but now I need to go 100% because this guy just made me look bad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Yeah. How about you, Robert? Anything for anyone for the Bears you're specifically thinking about?
So it's funny, right? Because the Bears with number one and number nine, in some way, shape, or form, they are probably taking a receiver. And we would hope that they're taking one very, very high, mm-hmm. right? So if it's Marvin Harrison, then they'd probably be moving down from number one. If it's Roma Dunze or Malik Nabers, please. That means that they'd get them closer to nine. Maybe they'd trade down, get somebody like Devontae Walker, like Adonai Mitchell, all kinds of other names. Mm-hmm. But then it won't shock me, I'm just saying, with Shane Waldron coming to town, if the Bears at least take a look at a second receiver. I don't know if they have the picks for this, but guys like Ricky Pearsall out of Florida, guys like Ladd McConkley, guys like Anaya Smith is somebody I'm going to keep saying his name, even though he didn't really do anything today. It wasn't a bad day. It wasn't a great day. But guys, the thought here is a slot receiver that can also play a little bit of Z for you and blocks like a demon, right?
And Johnny Wilson.
And if you get one of those guys, I have a feeling that these Shanahan McVay type systems, at least from what I've seen from them, are going to get a lot of value out of that player, very similar to the way that Buffalo has gotten a lot of value out of Khalil Shakir. Now, with the timeline of the offseason, there's a very good chance this doesn't actually happen. Right. Yeah. And you end up with a free agent signing that you can't really not play. And then at that mm-hmm. point, you're sitting on Velus, who maybe they still don't really want to cut. You're talking about Tyler Scott, who you definitely don't want to cut if you're not cutting Velus. Mm-hmm. You've got your free agent receiver. You have the receiver that you just drafted high, and you have DJ Moore. But who knows? Maybe that doesn't happen. I mean,
so how many guys? So you
that would be five.
Five. Okay.
And so maybe then you could fit one more on the mm-hmm. roster, but they might think that that's too many, especially yeah. when they're going to have to figure out edge one way or another. It's these safeties that I really think there's just an obvious selection that's sitting amidst them. I don't know what round the Bears want them at. It wouldn't surprise me. And what I'm operating under the assumption of is that the Bears are going to take the best safety to fall 75, that they're going to be patient and that they're going to wait until that third round spot to pick what they would hope would be their future, if not immediate future, starting free safety. But yeah. we'll see. I mean, biggest problem there is that there is free safety is an incredibly important position, especially with the consistency that Jaquan Brisker defends the flat and leaves the free safety up in cover three, which is a pretty common call for the Bears. So that rookie would play an awful lot and might be a leak that you don't want to spring, but I'll tell you what would be worse is playing Brisker back there. I mean,
how would you feel about trusting a rookie safety single high cover three middle of the field?
I mean, the coach inside of my head says, oh my gosh, that's terrifying. And maybe this becomes a conversation where Eddie Jackson isn't the sure cut we right. think he is.
But restructure, at least.
Yeah. Restructure and then bring in a rookie so that your third safety isn't Elijah Hicks right. and he gets tutored by the man himself yeah. before taking over for him next year. Who knows? I don't.
Yeah.
But it feels like the safeties are a much better, like, Bears lock, even though I think the Bears really want to take advantage of this deep wide receiver class.
Yeah.
They're just so high up at the top. Yeah. That it's a matter of when and who, if anything else.
Yeah. Yeah. And they also have a lot of avenues to add to their picks.
They do.
If you yeah. trade Justin Fields, you get some picks. If you trade down from one and you trade down from nine,
mm-hmm.
I would be shocked if the Bears don't have a second-round pick come draft day. When day two happens, they have a second-round pick. So maybe you draft a wide receiver there. Maybe you draft a safety there. Right. I don't know. But the point is that they have those avenues to kind of increase that.
To exactly your point, there's a very good chance that we see two pretty major trades. Mm-hmm. The Bears could trade Justin Fields and also trade down from number nine. The yeah. Bears could trade number one and still trade down from number nine if Ryan Poles is some draft fiend that he might be. I mean, this is a wide receiver class that opens up a lot of opportunity, and especially if Malik Nabers, Roma Dunze, and obviously Marvin Harrison Jr. all go before number nine, they may not be as interested as Brock Bowers as we would want to think they are. Right. And so a trade down from number nine there might make a lot of sense, and that plus the Fields pick would hopefully give us our JPJ choice, but that's a conversation for another time. But
this wide receiver class is also very interesting because there's a lot of different varieties of wide receivers that you can choose from. Last year's wide receivers class, if you wanted a wide receiver who was over 6 foot, who was a true X receiver, good luck. You weren't going to find one. They just wasn't in that draft. All the good wide receivers were 6 foot below, you know, more gadget, you know, Z wide receiver guys. This draft, though, has such a great variety. Let's say you do get Odunze at nine.
Mm-hmm.
Then maybe later on you get Anaya Smith, who's more of a slot guy. Right. If you're worthy, a guy like that. Let's say you get Nabers at nine, who's working, kind of moving all around. Then you can try and get an X, Keon Coleman, Javon Baker later. So there's a lot of different guys. Not only are there so many guys, but there's a lot of different types of wide receivers. So it's a perfect opportunity to draft two guys. Again, we don't know what they're going to do in free agency, so that could change. But right now, as it stands, could easily draft two guys.
Yeah. I got to ask about this because I think he's pretty popular in mock drafts. How about Luke McCaffrey?
I actually thought Luke McCaffrey was kind of rad today.
Yeah.
I mean, Luke McCaffrey isn't going to have this crazy vertical speed, but he's an NFL athlete. And look, I hate to say it, so I'm just going to ham it up, but let's all say it together. Bloodlines, baby. Like,
it's practically in my grades.
As hokey as I know it is to say it, Luke McCaffrey is somebody who comes from a football family, and he's not unaware of the rigor that it takes to play in the NFL. And he fits this category we're talking about. Think of him as like budget Ricky Pearsall, right? Yeah. Where Pearsall is going to get open a little more often. For those who don't know, Pearsall is like a 6'1 Florida receiver that's got quite a bit of suddenness in his movement. He has really solid footwork, and he's plenty physical and blocks his butt off. Luke McCaffrey sprung a couple of outside runs today in the team portion. I mean, he obviously can block too. Mm-hmm. His biggest drawback right now is that he plays for Rice, which you're not going to see just a ton of crazy quality football out of that kind of organization.
Right, right.
But that's not to take anything away from the Rice Owls.
Rice plays two or three Big 12 teams at the start of every year, and I want to go watch that tape for him because
you should.
Those are not good gigs.
And my thought is that if McCaffrey comes in, because he's like 205 pounds, like he's a big dude, he can block. And so if he becomes kind of like that, and we'll see how he stacks up, but that Alan Lazard role that the Bears had for a little while, he's not going to be as big as Lazard, but a blocking receiver that can do a little more than just that. Like, he might actually find a spot, but that's all a matter of where he gets drafted. I mean, another one of my favorite targets, Ladd McConkey, blocks well above his pay grade. And moreover, he's somebody that, look, I love Ladd and also think he's going to get drafted way later than a lot of people think he does.
You think?
Like, well, right now you've got plenty of people that want to take him in the low first. These are the same people that thought it was a lock that Josh Downs was getting taken in the mid second, and he was not. Yep. Those same people.
Go ahead.
Those same people thought Tyler Scott was a lock in the late third at the absolute latest, and he was not. You could easily get McConkey in the mid to late second. More than likely, because this is a league that loves size, and I salivate at that because that's just free value, baby.
And I think how deep this wide receiver class is too might weirdly cause people to drop, because it's like, okay, are we going to draft Ladd McConkey at the end of the first, or are we going to draft someone else, and then we can get a different wide receiver at the end of the second, who's maybe just a little bit worse. But you know, the drop-off for wide receiver is going to be less than the drop-off at edge or whatever position it is they decide to take. So that might cause him. But, yeah, he's, you know, in simulators, he's going like, you know, late first or late second. Not that we should take simulators to heart, but you know what I mean. It's kind of where he's being projected. I would, based on what I've seen, I would absolutely take him in first. But you're right. He could easily fall later than that. But I do think he's that good.
it's a league that covers size and speed. It's always going to be a league that would rather draft Devontae Walker than Ladd McConkey, even if the film is obvious, because all it takes is one sky more to just immediately erase all the progress of like sub 200 pound route running receivers.
I still believe in sky more. I should
not. Kadarius Toney too, right?
Yeah.
If there's one thing working for Ladd, it's that big wig draft media started comparing him to Cooper Kupp. And so as soon as you get a Hall of Famer comp, who got drafted in the third round, like maybe that fluffs him up, but then you're going to get some Greg Gabriel type that's going to be like comparing him to a third rounder, bonk. Like that's, I would take him in the third round kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I think this is a bit of a hot topic for some fans out there. And what are your guys' thoughts on whether it be at 9 or trading backwards and taking that edge rusher there? Because it's such a premium position that you don't get the same talent at later. So yep. Go ahead, Steve. What do you think of that?
So I love that idea. And partially for the reason I was just talking about earlier with the wide receivers, the drop off on wide receivers. The wide receiver you can get at 1, obviously, if you can go to and say, like, that's great and fantastic. But the wide receiver you can get in the second round is also going to be pretty good. The edge rusher you can get in the second round, there's a huge fall off for me at the top of the draft. You have, you know, Turner, Latu, Verse, and whatever order you want them in, those top three guys. Then you got, like, Chop Robinson, who's good, Braylon Trice, who's good. But and then after that, like, Braswell is okay. But really after that, there's not a whole lot. It's a lot of question marks there. So I like the idea of getting that top-tier pass rusher, a guy you can really count on early, and then drafting maybe a wide receiver later on. Or drafting two wide receivers later on, doing kind of what the Packers did. They drafted like, what, 3 wide receivers last year?
Drafted a lot of wide receivers.
And they were like, one of these guys is going to work out, and they actually got a couple of guys to work out. But that's, to me, might be a better strategy in this particular draft. So I think if Turner, Latu, those are my top two guys, if those one of those guys is there, maybe you can even trade back to like 12 mm-hmm. and get one of those guys. I think that's, to me, a pretty good plan. If they draft a wide receiver, I'd be happy with that too. But I like the idea of drafting an edge.
My head thinks that if Dallas Turner falls, drafting him would be a coup. I mean, I think he's a player that if he actually falls to 10, is going to be undervalued at 10. This is a position that has seen all kinds of goofballs drafted in the top round that don't end up working out. And to your point, I want to like Chop a lot, and I like Chop some. And like that's one of the better, like, but not great. Right, exactly. But he's like the upper middle, if not like it falls off really hard at edge rusher. And I would love to see the Bears add at that position. My heart though says, regardless of who's the quarterback, give them something special that the Chicago Bears have never had on offense. Like be that freaking Joe Hall. For all I care, like some kind of almost show of support. It's like what we all said about the Claypool trade at the time, where half the people that didn't even like the Claypool trade just liked the fact that the Bears had traded for a receiver and that they'd given up legitimate capital to do so. So I really don't want to become too prisoner of the moment and ignore how good an idea it is. Yeah. But you better have a plan in free agency. You better get lucky enough in the draft to field a solid receiving core around what could potentially be a rookie quarterback. Because if the Bears end up rolling into 2024 with pretty much the same offensive line as they did this year, they just added one free agent. And then DJ Moore, Tyler Boyd, Tyler Scott, and Velus Jones, plus two, I don't know, like a UDFA and somebody else. I think that there are going to be a lot of people that would be disappointed, but there's like way more picks than that. Yeah. That's a near zero chance of happening because every time we have that conversation, we forget that, like you're saying, in that case, you would hopefully get a second round pick. You're probably not using that on defense. You'd get a third round pick. You're probably not using that on defense. If you have, well, I guess you maybe in a Bears worst case scenario, you go edge rusher, center, or safety. And then you get your big wide receiver in the fourth round. But we'll see.
Back to just like Turner real quick, because you mentioned like you think it'd be a coup if he's there at 9, and I agree. It's interesting because he's, again, I don't want to type simulators as like gospel, but if you do run a simulator, Dallas Turner is almost unanimously there at 9. And we kind of talked about this last night. we don't think that's going to happen. I mean, he's the guy who's going to test out. He's going to test amazingly. He's as an elite athlete. He has the production in college. He's a better run defender than people give him credit for. That's a top 8 pick, if you ask me. So, if he's there at 9, that'd be great. If he's not there at 9 and he goes ahead, maybe one of those wide receivers then drops. If Neighbors is somehow there at 9, you run to the podium and don't even think twice about it. If Odunze is there, you think very hard about picking him, too, instead of trading Dak. So, basically, the point I'm saying is, I think there is going to be a receiver at 9 because Turner's going to go higher than people think. The two offensive tackles, four offensive tackles potentially, are going to go higher than people think. So that's going to push those wide receivers down. So I do think there is going to be a wide receiver there for them to take if they want to.
What do you think?
I think if Odunze is gone and Neighbors, I would assume, would be gone if Odunze is gone.
Yeah.
I'm there for whether it be trade down or take the guy at 9. Either one I'm okay with. I prefer the trade down because I'm greedy, but that's not reality always either. But if Odunze is there and they take an edge rusher, I start to have a little heartburn about it. As much as I love Dallas Turner, as much as I love Latu, like the tape that I've seen from Latu, and there's more tape to watch, like with guys like Verse too, I think there's definitely more to think about there. But man, just like you said, the show of faith in your rookie quarterback of That's giving great. Him everything he could possibly need. We're the Chicago Bears.
Please, for once.
It doesn't work. It never works like it's supposed to, so have backup plans.
Please, for once.
Yeah.
Please, for once.
Yeah. Last question for you guys. Start with you, Steve. Who is the best player at the Senior Bowl?
This is a tough one. I think, you know, I mean, I want to say Jackson Powers Johnson, but I feel like I'm, you know, I've talked about him too much. The best player at the Senior Bowl. I'm going to have to go with Jackson Powers Johnson. I honestly think he is. Just, you know, because I'm watching O-line, D-line. I'm not watching the wide receivers. Yeah. I'm not watching the quarterbacks. I'm not watching all of them.
All opinions based on today.
So. The guys that I've seen, I'm going to go with Jackson Powers Johnson as the best player at the Senior Bowl based on the positions that I watched.
Yeah. Robert?
Given that Latu took the step back that he did, it's either the cat from Oklahoma that you're talking about, who sounds like he was just unbelievable, or it's Quinyon Mitchell. And as good as so many guys are on the national team, I don't think you can put them above what these other guys are grading at right now. And I do think that matters. I mean, for as much as people like us would take our shot at giving draft evaluations, and I think we're going to do as damn good a job as we possibly can, we will never get to talk to these players. We will never get to, like, have a room of 8 to 10 NFL scouts with years of experience. We don't get the whole puzzle, right? So I try only to go as far as to take other people's rankings and adjust them, except for the part when you know that there's like a fifth rounder or something and you're like, this guy's a second rounder. What are we doing here?
Yeah.
And so to me, Quinyon Mitchell was that good. And it's a corner. It's a position that I think a lot of people need. We were watching Alabama last night. Kool-Aid, as good as he is, does not establish himself as this must-take top 10. Somebody's going to, right? And that's just probably where I land.
Yeah. So for me, my initial answer would be JPJ because I think he was – like, from the standpoint of watching football today, I do not think there was a more dominant player on the field than Jackson Powers Johnson. But because you said it, I'm going Tyler Guyton. I think he might be the best football player out there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is a guy who in Pop Warner played running back and had 26 touchdowns in a single season.
That's insane.
That's a guy who played
6'7", 330.
Played quarterback growing up after Pop Warner. Between Pop Warner and college, he played quarterback. And then he switched to offensive tackle.
Oh my gosh. What a boss.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the Walter Payton of offensive linemen, right? Like that.
I mean, yeah, if you're just talking just straight ceiling, it's Tyler Guy, no questions asked. Like his ceiling is the top tackle in football.
I hadn't been able to find a snap of his tape.
It's tough.
Before today.
Yeah.
And so it was blind eyes coming in. And it was another one with like, who is this guy? Like, I knew his name. I knew who he
That's
was.
That's awesome,
but
though.
Like, it was so fun to watch him play football today.
Because sometimes you can end up knowing a player almost too well, yeah. Right? Where Anaya Smith, I am a big fan of his. He took more L's than I'm going to tell you he took because I like him. And that's what we do, right? Yeah. We naturally protect the guys we like because we know them and we go, oh, well, you just lost your footing there. Or, yeah. Oh, well, you know, you didn't do that. Or you didn't get the chance to do what I know you're good at. When yeah. somebody makes plays where you go, that one, who is that? Mm-hmm. What number is that? Because he's got his jersey rolled up. And yeah. you're like, okay, 55 and Tyler Guyton. Okay, name to know. Like, yeah. those are the ones where it just shakes you by the shoulders. It's fun.
Yeah, sure. All right, you guys have anything else you want to throw in here before we wrap this thing up? And we'll be back tomorrow for you guys. So anything you guys want to mention?
I just want to shout out Marshawn Nealand one time because I thought he looked pretty good today. He's a defensive end from Western Michigan. Mm-hmm. And he's like 6'4", 270, I think is about what he measured at. And he was the fastest.
Blue size.
Exactly. And he was the fastest defensive lineman tracked today, almost 20 miles per hour. Like, it's a guy I definitely want to watch more of. It's hard to find Western Michigan tape, but I'm going to try my best. I'm going to see if I can get him on him. So I just want to give him a quick shout out.
Nothing for me. Stoked for a day of pads tomorrow. Hope the wide receiver and DB competition ramps up that much more.
Yeah, and for anyone who isn't familiar with day two of the Senior Bowl, full pads, the hitting ramps up. And I think it's always important to mention, these are football players who haven't played football in 3 months, most of them. They're like, today is the warm-up. It's getting your body back into it, back into the stresses of playing football, of hitting people and getting hit. Tomorrow, the hitting starts to get real. Like, the one-on-ones tomorrow are – I think it's the most fun time of the Senior Bowl are the one-on-ones tomorrow.
Especially the ones in the trenches. Yeah. Like, I'm going to enjoy my time. Like, a sip of fine wine watching the wide receivers and DBs. But the trenches is where you will hear pops and haulers yeah. from the other it's end of the field sound. For, like,
gotta love it.
4 hours. It's
yeah.
great.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you guys for joining us. Please make sure to like, subscribe, comment, give us a rating. Let us know what you guys think. We want to hear from you. And make sure to go check out our scouting reports. We're writing them, publishing them daily over there at ontapsportsnet.com, where we have Bears content, Bulls, Cubs, White Sox, Chicago Fire, Blackhawks, gambling, college football. We got it all over there. Go check it out. And remember, we are one of two Chicago Bears podcasts on ONTAP Sportsnet Podcast Network, along with the Bears Nation podcast. Thank you guys for watching and have a great night.
Boom.
Okay, Q, what article or articles do you need to write
still?